Welcome to the Business Marketing Clubcast, a podcast for B2B marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead in what is, you and I both know, it's the toughest profession in business. We'll be offering insight and inspiration from B2B marketers on a key current topic, advice from experienced CMOs on how to climb the career ladder, and top networking tips. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and chair of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to CMO of logistics firm Wincanton, Nick Eads, about what the criteria should be today for great account-based marketing. Head of Growth at PwC, Nick Masters, shares some great B2B marketing examples and what he's learned from them. And Susie Clark will share a key lesson that she's taken on the journey to being UKMD of marketing agency Omobono. All that, and I'll explain how to take advantage of the Business Marketing Club's mentoring program. So stay tuned. One of the big buzzwords of B2B marketing today is ABM, or account-based marketing. CMO of logistics firm Wincanton, Nick Eads, has been judging the account-based marketing awards for B2B Marketing magazine, and he joins me now. Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. Good to be here.
Perhaps first of all, it would be good to understand a little bit more about what Wincanton does.
Yeah, thanks. Wincanton's a fascinating company, been around for about 90 years.
Right.
Third-party logistics means that we deliver logistics services for companies like Sainsbury's, Argos, B&Q, and then companies like Aggregate Industries, EDF, other people. So we have about 20,000 people. We do revenue in excess of $1 billion. And like I say, we've been around for a while.
Okay. Well, it's very good that you've made time between that and to actually come to the podcast today. So thank you very much. Account-based marketing then, big buzzword. What exactly is it?
Well, this is the thing, Dave. It's been around a long time. And I think it's got a lot of froth and excitement about it right now because it does deliver.
Okay.
And that's quite unique, right? Mm. And there are lots of companies doing great things in account-based marketing. But for me, this goes back a long way. This goes back to the sort of 80s and 90s and a company called Peppers and Rogers and an HBR paper that talks about account-based selling. Now, that just is how big companies sell to big companies.
Mm.
It's very deep, very wide engagement. It's long haul. This is not B2C, right? This is B2B, long sales cycle, preceded by a long buy cycle interwoven, and then a long delivery, right? This is contract-based work. So the sense of AB account-based anything, frankly, is significant. But for I think the B2B marketing world to latch onto account-based marketing is a bit of a hallelujah moment. It definitely works, and there's lots of evidence to say that it does.
So it works, I guess, is the reason why it's you'd say it's important.
Yeah, I know I'm going to caveat why I say it works. I think, well, my experience is, having worked in this space but not called it ABM for a long time, is it certainly works at what I would call the top of the pyramid. Right? If you do the classic pyramid, three tiers, big account to big account, you know, one to one, and then you have one to few in the middle, and then one to many. I'm less confident about one to many.
Okay.
I really am, because I come back to what I said. This is long-haul selling and marketing interwoven, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important, but at the same time, I think you start with one to one and one to few. The one to many piece is a question.
Okay, and you say it's been going for a long while. So how has it changed? How does it feel different today?
I think we have managed to make it exciting.
Okay, what does that mean?
I think everybody's talking about it. I went to B2B Ignite, and you know, thousands of people did.
Yeah,
and I squeezed myself into every packed session I could, and my team went as well, and they were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And you know, we spent our lives downloading papers and documents and how-to guides and this, that, and the other. And it is more than a buzzword; it's a buzz phenomenon.
Mm.
So that's what's changed. I think everybody's talking about it because when you go to something like Ignite, you see case studies where it works.
Okay.
And the companies that are doing that work well with evidence. It's not opinion, it's evidence. They're able to point to that. And that's what we saw when we judged the awards. You're looking at an evidence-based long-haul activity. I hate the word campaign because it's not. But it's this integrated activity. So you've got excitement and evidence. I mean, that's why I think it's exciting.
Mm. You mentioned the awards and you're judging the account-based marketing entries. What criteria did you use to be able to judge that?
Yeah, so this is a good one. Now, there was a mixture of people in the room,
yeah.
Right? So some of us had been doing this for a while and some of us perhaps hadn't been doing it quite so long. So for me and a couple of the other guys in the room, we kind of agreed that it was like ABM was a formula.
Right.
Which is measurable, successful engagement over time.
Okay.
Right? So it's clearly not a campaign. It's clearly not tactical. Mm. This is a strategic engagement over time. Now, there's deal-based marketing, and, you know, we see a bit of that, and we saw a bit of that. Deal-based marketing is very pursuit-orientated. It's much more of a direct attack on one account over time with specific competitor in mind, for example.
Okay.
Right? So, now, the twist in this is that it's an over-time consequence. So you can see traction gaining ground, gaining revenue, gaining wallet share.
Sort of growing momentum over
exactly.
a period of time, yeah.
Exactly. Rather than, you know, a campaign is, you know, we don't do buy one, get one free when you're selling a power station or infrastructure play or a warehouse, right? Mm. So it is about wallet share rather than a sort of a deal base.
Okay. So when you judged all of these different entries, did you sometimes I go in and judge things and I kind of come out with a bit of a sense of disappointment that actually the range of entries wasn't quite what I hoped as being the kind of big pinnacle of our profession. So how did you feel as you came out of that? Is there good ABM out there?
So you've had the same experience as I have, clearly. There is a range, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So is there good ABM out there? Yeah, there is. Okay. Is there bad ABM out there? Yes, sadly, there is. Mm. And I'm nervous about that kind of infecting the good work that is being done, because the trouble when something gets very frothy like this and very, you know, like I said, there is really good stuff out there. And when people talk events and whatnot about case studies and they really are good, that's fine, but some of the frothy stuff is just polluting the pine. That's the bit that makes me nervous.
Sure, and so focusing on the good stuff, where the specific things in the good ABM examples that you saw that you can perhaps draw out for us.
Yeah, if I take it outside the awards for a second, but I just look at everything I've seen in the awards, the events, other shows, other things that I've downloaded. There's a consistent pattern in ABM that. It kind of aligns a couple of things. And one is you have to get the sales team on board.
Right.
No sales team, no ABM.
Okay.
It's that simple.
Okay.
Now, that's the tough bit, right? Because a lot of the time, and that's why I get worried about, even in the ITSMA model, there's programmatic ABM, right? What's the sales role in that? Does it matter enough to sales over time for this to be true ABM, or is it something different?
Because the consequence is you've just kind of got isolated marketing, right? In which it's not really impacting the customer.
No, exactly. I think when ABM works really well, you move from being a supplier to being a strategic partner. And everybody who works in key account sales, whether it's Mentor Group or Miller Heiman, all those guys that do sales effectiveness, right? Their evidence is that the pinnacle of the achievement of a really super strong key account plan, it is jointly owned by the sales lead, the sales structure, the company, and the customer, right? It's a joint plan because you know what you're delivering, when you're delivering it. You've got probably the intimacy of understanding their spend, their wallet, their total available market as a customer, right? Yeah. And bear in mind, in logistics, a big retailer will spend $1 billion a year on logistics, but not with one supplier, lots of it's in-house. Right? Mm. So you're looking at total wallet share by customer. Mm. So if you've achieved a key account plan, which the customer recognizes as a joint plan, then you know what you're working on together. Now, ABM to support that is extraordinary. So that, for me, is where the best of ABM exists. And that's why I get a little bit nervous about it further down, because I don't think you're able to achieve strategic significance as a company supplying another company without that level of key account plan intimacy. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's possible, but at the moment, that's where I'm perhaps less comfortable.
And more difficult to find examples where that's
working out.
So hopefully there'll be aspiring B2B marketers who are listening today who will be really intrigued to find out more about ABM. How do they go about getting a grounding in account-based marketing? Are there books or to read or courses to go on or specific practice that you would recommend?
Okay, so books, I haven't found one, and neither do I have the patience these days to read books. I tend to skim very fast and read the covers. You know, there's great books like, you know, Hope is Not a Strategy. You don't need to read the rest of the book, right? So, but what we've been doing to make sure that we get this into our business is carefully going to evidence-based events.
Okay.
Where you can see companies like yours doing ABM. And with the greatest respect to every agency I've ever worked with and some that I'm probably going to work with, an agency presentation on ABM is interesting but not important, really.
Okay.
Because you're looking for a peer who has achieved results and knows the path and can tell you about the scars and the cul-de-sacs and the obstacles and everything else, because nobody will be able to tell you that unless they've done it. And I know agencies do a lot of work for a lot of companies and do it quite intimately, but for me, they're not kind of hired and fired in the same way.
Right.
And because this is long haul, you have to manage the expectations internally between the sales team and yourself on sales cycle by cycle and time to outcome. Now, whether that outcome is just measurable traction at an interest level and an engagement level, or whether that's revenue, you have to decide, because only you know how long your sales cycle is and how the customers will or will not respond. And you have to do a lot of trial and error to work that out. And I would also front that up saying you also have to lead the primary research yourself. What are your customers interested in? Why would they buy from you? Who are your competitors? All that differentiation work so that you start well. Okay.
Nick Eads, CMO at Wincanton. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Every family has its ugly duckling, the unloved, unappreciated, ignored and untrendy one, the outcast. The ugly duckling of marketing is B2B marketing. But that's a mistake. In fact, B2B marketing and B2B marketers need to be nurtured and celebrated. 80% of all of UK firms derive at least some of their income from B2B. 44% of UK turnover comes from B2B activity, so you ignore this duckling at your peril. There's some great B2B marketing out there, and I'm joined now by Head of Growth at PwC, Nick Masters, to look at some of it. Nick, thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Hello, Dave. I thought you were talking about me when you were talking about the ugly duckling to begin with, but I won't take it personally.
Definitely B2B marketing. So first of all, tell us, I think most people will know what PwC do, but perhaps tell us about some of the current things that they are working on.
Well, as a firm, we're involved in so many different things at any one time. You know, we're known in some ways as an audit and accountancy firm, but our kind of advisory and tax and deals and businesses are equally as large. And what always fascinates me, and the fact that I always point to, is that we're seen as a big organisation that works with big organisations, which is absolutely the case. But the single biggest sector in ours is private business.
Right. Okay.
You know, so we work with a huge range of different businesses, you know, in different sectors, you know, different stages of their development. And that's a that's fascinating from my perspective. It gives me the opportunity to think about things in right across the board. We're not just talking to, you know, the sort of the boardrooms of the FTSE 350. We're talking right down to sort of startups and scale-ups.
And I'm really intrigued by your job title. So head of growth, what does a head of growth do?
In this instance, I wouldn't be speaking on behalf of all of the growth community. I think it's really about trying to move beyond just the channel and the activity and look at what are we doing out there in the market? Are we talking about the right things? Are we talking to the right people? Is our message landing in the right places to make sure that our agenda, which is sustainable, profitable growth, is being reached on an ongoing basis?
So there's exciting marketing and digital stuff out there. What's caught your eye?
Well, my rather killjoy rejoinder to that, unfortunately, is that I think in a world where you don't have to remember anything, there's no real point in being memorable. And I say that in the sense that I think that the traditional ideas of marketing where you had to create a big splash and make a big noise and shout is no longer the relevant route to go down. What you need to be is to be seen to be everywhere that you need to be, where somebody's asking the question of, can you help me? Or more importantly, I need help. What help does that take? Are you there? Are you able to engage? And I feel that those traditional methods, I've just come from Old Street and seen let's call it a very large social network, has spent a lot of money putting up billboards all the way up the escalators, telling us to use their job service, which is the ultimate so in so what, as far as I'm concerned. It's not memorable. It's not impactful. It's not going to make me do anything differently to the way it was before. What I see as important, impressive in the kind of marketing communications area nowadays are the people and the organisations that are constantly engaging, and the important word here is engaging, with their marketplace to make sure that they're reacting to the things that that market cares about.
So they're kind of in the right place at the right time for when they need it.
Correct. It's that whole kind of Google idea of the moment of truth. Where are you? And are you able to answer that question that somebody invariably is asking either on Google or on their social network or in that forum or wherever else? Have you created the content model that allows you to make sure you're in all of the different places and all the different things that people want to will consume information? So are you there? Are you able to pick it up? And also, more importantly, are you able to respond? Are you able to react and engage with people so that you're actually talking about the right things? I think, you know, particularly the problem for bigger organisations is it's very easy to live within your own infrastructure and ecosystem and become almost insulated from the outside world. It's absolutely critical that you're taking the pulse of your market or the time, and particularly, you know, a large and diverse market. And the tools that we have now, and the internet has made it easy to get that information back. So it all behoves anybody that isn't paying absolute attention to what's being said. And I don't mean that in the kind of BBC News vox pop way, you know, here's the market trader from Leicester, see what they think. I'm talking about actually all of this data and information that you can harvest all of the time on what is important and how you respond to it. You know, I suppose I'm an advocate for exactly what we're doing here. You know, this is good marketing to me, because this podcast, I'm assuming it seems the light of day, unless you cut me out.
It will definitely see the light of day, I promise you that.
It will have longevity. And if somebody is asking, you know, the question of, you know, what does good B2B marketing look like, this will have longevity way beyond something that might be a fantastically creative campaign, but is instantly forgotten because we don't have to remember things. You know, that come back to that idea. My phone makes me stupid. My phone means that I don't ever have to file anything away or instinctively recall, because it's always there. It's always at the end.
But let's just test that viewpoint a little bit. Are you saying that I never need the big shouty campaign? Is there not kind of a place for both in your heart?
There is in my heart, but not necessarily in my head.
Okay.
And yes, of course, you know, doing things well, being thoughtful and imaginative and innovative, you know, there's never an excuse not to do that. And, you know, you can create your own videos and things that are great adverts, but always remember, be informative. Tell somebody something that they need to know. Don't just do it for its own sake. I think my ethos here is, if you want to be known for something, be known for it. Go out and talk about it. You've got a website, you've got blogs, you've got podcasts, you've got videos. You can create them, or you can join someone else's. You know, you can be out there. I look at, say, you know, things that I think individuals have got this nailed in the UK better than a lot of organisations. I think people like Steve Davis and his influencer work, you know, he's produced a whole raft of different things. You know, now he's seen as an expert in it. Matt Ballantyne, you know, with WD-40 and a whole range of things more on the technology side. And, you know, Rachel from All Things I See, you see her cropping up all over the place. You know, she is an acknowledged expert because she's out there being an expert. And so when somebody thinks of these things, they think of those people. And that's what organisations need to do, because they're kind of there. They're in your consciousness. And wherever you look, you'll find them.
So bringing this back to your role as head of growth, how are you taking that approach and making it work at PwC?
I think what we've been trying to do is to live by, you know, to a certain degree by that as much as we can, and try and cover as many different concepts with different types of content that we can. So, you know, what's a big issue for, you know, it's impossible to ignore, you know, say Brexit. On the day that the Brexit vote, we had a webcast and we were one of the few people that talked about it, and we had 15,000 people tune out. You know, we normally get 1,000.
We had
15,000 because it was like we were daft enough to put our heads above the parapet and say, you know, if nothing else, this is just a big group hug here. Let's talk about this. And ever since then, you know, we've had a podcast series that's talked about it as things happen, but not reporting on the news. That's impossible. There's too many people doing that. But what do businesses need to think about it? And so, you know, we've hit the hundreds of thousands on the listenership of that, because it's allowed us to be part of that debate throughout. And, you know, across all of the things we do, you know, we're producing, you know, we've got these little digital only products now for the startup market, and we're producing little video series of, you know, not only, you know, use this because it's cool, but also use this because it's going to tell you something. So, you know, either end of that spectrum, we're trying to find the ways that just mean that we've got these things that are out there that are working for us 24/7, rather than just, oh, they didn't somebody do something about that last year? Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't remember. I remember the journey up here.
Head of Growth at PwC, Nick Masters, thanks very much.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
Next up, Susie Clark shares a key lesson that she's taken on the journey to being UK MD of marketing agency Omer Bono. Susie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Dave. It's great to be here.
First of all, you should probably tell us a little bit about what Omer Bono is and what it does.
Sure. Omer Bono is a B2B specialist agency. We have offices in London, Cambridge and Chicago. And we are essentially a full-service digital agency. So we do everything through from strategy to creative to development, purely for B2B brands.
And you're the UK MD. So what is it that's made you the brilliant B2B marketer that you are today?
What has it been? It's an interesting one, actually, because my background is not fully B2B at all.
Okay.
My background is actually consumer, and I've worked for about, you know, 15 years plus in consumer marketing. And about 18 months ago, I decided that I wanted a new challenge and started interviewing for new jobs. And to be honest, I didn't really anticipate that I would end up in a B2B agency.
Right.
But I met the founders of Omer Bono, Ben, Fran and Chris, and they were such wonderful people. And the work that they did was phenomenal. So I don't really have, you know, pure play B2B experience, but I don't really think that matters.
Okay. So they kind of persuaded you into the light after your years in the darkness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly that.
And so Have you been able to take anything from your B2C experience and apply it in the world of B2B?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, the way that I talk about it is that marketing, you know, whether it's consumer or B2B, you're still marketing to people.
Right.
And it's still an emotional journey. And arguably, actually, I think that B2B marketing is more emotional because, you know, if you're buying a consumer good, it's just you that's going to, you know, be impacted by it. Whereas in the B2B world, you're buying a service or a solution that's for the wider company. So it's a bigger risk, I guess, and more emotional in that respect. So I think there's huge learnings that you can apply either way.
And what's the skill or quality that has been so important to you in terms of moving through from the B2C world into the B2B?
I think being open-minded and continuous learning. I mean, again, my career has really changed. I started off, you know, way back in the day after university, working in sort of direct marketing and CRM. Mm. And then I moved into digital, and then I moved into social, and then I moved into influencer, and now I've moved into B2B. And I think for me, it's about, you know, applying all of those things and continuously, you know, being open to learning new things. You know, the whole landscape has changed so much, you know, even in the last 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, you know. Mm. You know, what was a YouTuber? We didn't really exist 10 years ago. So, you know, you need to continually test things and learn things and try new things. You know, everything changes and, you know, God knows what the next new thing will be in the next year's time. Mm. So for me, it's about that, about being open to learning, taking that on board, trying new things and doing things differently.
And is there a kind of approach that you would take to be able to be properly open? You know, how do I make sure that I don't get set in my ways?
Oh, that's a hard one. I mean, I guess, you know, reminding yourself, really. I mean, I have a notebook and I remind myself of all sorts of little things I have to keep doing.
Okay.
But I think, and also, you know, the things that we do with clients is we always encourage them to allow a bit of time or a bit of budget aside to test. I mean, a lot of people talk about innovation, you know, how do we stay at the forefront of innovation? So I think, you know, setting aside some budget or some headspace, really, to allow that is really, really important. And we always do it. Mm. And you have to be prepared to fail. And we talk a lot about failure at Mobono, and we encourage
it. Right.
You know, it's not something to be frightened of. Mm. Failure is a good thing as long as you learn from it. Mm. So I guess that's another element of it, which is, you know, not being fearful.
Mm. I'm really interested by the move that you've made from consumer to business, because quite often I find that the people kind of see this big barrier between B2B and B2C. Now you've actually operated in the B2B space for what, 18 months, I think?
About that, yeah.
So you can kind of look back, I guess, and tell me, well, there must be some differences. What are the key differences? And then I'll ask you, what are the similarities?
I mean, I guess really, from a consumer perspective, it's much more tactical, which would probably surprise you.
B2B.
No, B2C is actually
B2C
much
is more tactical.
Right. I mean, I guess largely, though, because the brands are probably more established and more in the public eye, I guess, at all times. And I would argue that B2B sometimes is not as creative. I mean, I found it very interesting that an event we went to recently, I can't remember how many people there were there, but we asked, you know, the B2B marketers who was proud of the creativity that they've produced in the last year. And there was only a handful of people that put their hand up.
Why?
So I think there's a real opportunity to push the creative boundaries in the B2B world. Mm. And I'm still trying to understand why that's the case. Because in the consumer world, you know, anything goes. And I've done all sorts of crazy stuff. You know, I broke the world record for the most number of people having a shower on Bournemouth Beach once, which was a bit random. But I do think it's moving in the B2B space, but I think there has been a tendency to focus on the sort of the product services, the attributes of the product, rather than actually adding a creative layer onto it. But I think it is moving in the right direction.
And what about the similarities?
The similarities? I mean, it's marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that's all I can say, really. It's marketing, so it's the same.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same channels. We're talking to the same people, just about a different subject matter. there's no real difference. And I find it really frustrating that there is this perceived barrier between the two. And it's very visible.
Yeah.
The way that I find it quite frustrating when we look at awards, and, there'll be a B2B award. Yeah. You don't get a consumer award. There's thousands of different, different entries for that. So it does bother me. And I spend quite a bit of time writing to people and asking them why they don't focus on B2B as much as they do the consumer landscape. They're yet to answer, but, I try.
Well, good for you.
Thank you.
Susie Clark, UK MD of Omo Bono. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it. Time's up. And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Clubcast. My thanks to my guests, Nick Eads, Nick Masters and Susie Clark. Please do let us know what you think of our podcast today, what you've liked and also what we can do better. You can contact us at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. That's businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And that's also the address, by the way, to use if you want to contact us to take part in future podcasts. We'd very much welcome all views and all experiences. And if you've got ideas for what you'd like us to cover. And you know what? It's also the address to use if you'd like to find out more about the Business Marketing Club. The Business Marketing Club is a network for B2B marketers. It's run by B2B marketers for passion, not profit. I'm not paid for doing this. I'm here because I really believe in the cause of B2B marketing, and that goes for all of our guests as well. The Business Marketing Club is behind this podcast, but it also runs events and mentoring programs for UK-based B2B marketers. So if you're working in business-to-business marketing or thinking of working in business-to-business marketing or just interested in business-to-business marketing, we are for you. And it doesn't matter whether you've just started out or whether you've been in the profession for decades, whether you're a CMO or a marketing executive, whether you're client side or agency side, whether you're based in London or Long Eaton, we've got something to support you. We are the only sector agnostic support network for B2B marketers in the UK run by B2B marketers. And we bring together marketers from leading clients, agencies and vendors. And that gives us a unique opportunity, really, to help one another out. So if you're a member of the Business Marketing Club, you can apply to be a mentor of other B2B marketers or be a mentee and get mentored by people with good marketing experience. And we try and match mentor and mentee according to the specific requirements that mentees have and the experiences that mentors are able to offer. So that's something that I think has added a lot of value to B2B marketers who are members of the club. If you want to join, look us up at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And when you contact us, please do mention that you found us through the podcast so that we know to do more of these. I'm David Stevens. Thank you very much for listening today.